Good evening, everyone. Let's take just a minute and kind of set our motivation and bring ourselves present for the talk. So wherever we've been in our day-to-day, very possibly out and about in the world, and busy with work or family, but we've taken the time now to share the Dharma, to turn our attention to thoughts of training our mind, thoughts of others. So we should rejoice just the fact that we've made this time. Many other things we could be doing. We could stay and work late at the office. We could go to the movies. But each of us has made the decision to listen to the Dharma. And with that focus, we think of ways in which we can work with our mind, maybe add some tools to our repertoire of how we might deal with a situation tomorrow. We may respond in a more skillful way. And we do that with a thought, not just for ourselves, but that we might be able to benefit each and every sentient being that we come in contact with, and even beyond those that we have a direct physical connection with. It would be the cause for all beings to attain liberation and full enlightenment. So really generate that thought in your mind and your heart. Good evening, everyone. I'm Kevin, resident at Srivasti Abbey. You've probably figured out by now that I'm not Venerable Chogyam, so I'm probably glad for that. Venerable is at Cloud Mountain this evening on the last day of the Vajrasattva retreat, so she'll be back for the teachings next week. And I wanted to be really clear that this is my disclaimer, that there is not a tele-teaching tonight. There is a tele-sharing tonight. So I will share my thoughts and personal reflections along with some Dharma pieces, and invite any of the kind of comments from those that are joining me here from the Abbey, moral support. So I tell just a brief story of how this talk came about. I was getting ready to go visit my family and friends a few weeks ago and hadn't really talked with Venerable Chogyam since the Exploring Monastic Life program ended. And so the day before I left, he said, let's go for a walk. So we went for probably what was a 20-minute walk or so. And it was really nice. It was nice to catch up. Things have been quite busy. And even though we have all sorts of interactions, it's nice just to have that one-on-one time. And so we were just talking about how the ML program went and going to visit my family. And then I was saying how I was really looking forward to, she had taught just one night on the mind training like rays of the sun. And I was saying I was looking forward to the new series of teachings and learning a little bit more about some of the teachers who had written the texts, and that I had been reading some of the introductions and was quite inspired by that. A lot of times when I hear the historical reference of things, it's like I get distracted. I really am interested in the Dharma, not who said what and when they said it. So I kind of just put it out of my mind. But at the beginning of these teachings, I just took a kind of a different interest in it. And so that it was nice because it had really been kind of an inspiration in reading about some of them. And so without a moment's hesitation, she said, well, great, then you can do the talk while I'm gone on October the 2nd. So there wasn't really even a yes or anything. It was, okay. So here I am. Just a warning, if you come to the Abbey, just beware if you ever go a walk with Venerable Chödrön that, you know, be careful what you ask or what might come up, because you'll very possibly be volunteered for something you didn't plan when you started on the walk. So what I'm really going to share, my little note to myself as the title, is The Inspiration of the Mind Training Masters. So I'm not going to be looking just specifically at the mind training like rays of the sun, which is the text that Venerable is teaching from. But I wanted to put it into a little bigger framework for some of the mind training. So my plan is to tell a little bit, probably not a lot, about some of the different teachers and masters who wrote different mind training texts, and a little bit of the evolution of kind of, you know, how it got passed down. I'm not terribly versed in kind of all the historical pieces of that, so if I get to some place and anyone wants to fill in something, I'm happy to do that. But my intention and motivation is really to talk about the texts and specific quotes from the texts, but then how my understanding of the teachers and their relationships to their students create an inspiration for me personally to practice the Dharma. So if I can say anything, my intention for this evening is that for you to find those places for you, whether it's particular quotes from the mind training texts or from the relationship of teachers and students or from our fellow Dharma friends, that really create the inspiration for us to sustain our practice, to make that really personal. And so for me, that's how I in lots of ways develop that sense of joyous effort. So a couple of the quotes that I'll refer to will be actually from the 8 verses of thought transformation, simply because I'm most familiar with those and I have all those memorized, so I have pertinent ones that work for me and I've used them a lot. I'll make mention of some of the others from some of the other texts, but I'll use those and maybe we'll even pause for a minute or so as I get to those, and we can do a short little, like a 1 minute Lam Rim on those. And in that same way, it's like I really encourage you to find those things that resonate for you, and that may vary with time of what particular teachings or in like what we're doing, as Venerable will get into, of some of the pith instructions. So some of those that just seem to be pertinent, maybe in general, or maybe for a particular time in our life where they're particularly present with us and really kind of help us to maintain some focus. I really like this thought and this description of the Lojong, which basically means mind transformation. It's Tibetan, but it really means to change our thoughts from one state to another. So how we do that, if wherever we are with a particular frame of mind or a thought that we have, whether it be virtuous or not, and how we turn that maybe from a non-virtuous thought to a virtuous thought, or that we just become more skillful in, even when we have a virtuous thought, maybe we have a virtuous thought, but then how might I put that into action? How might I engage with somebody and be able to share that with someone else? And for me, the whole genre of the mind training teachings is really about how do I turn my mind from the thoughts of myself to the thoughts of others. So that's really one of the cornerstones of how do we move from that self-centered attitude to one that really is engaged for the benefit of others. So in the framework, I'll start with one of the verses from the 8 verses of thought transformation. In all actions I will examine my mind. In the moment a disturbing attitude arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. So for me, I probably say this verse at least once a day. It's one of those that for me really helps me to turn my mind to the Dharma. It's that way of when we ring the bell in the morning. I really like, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh's, whenever you hear the bell, whether it's the bell in the meditation hall or the phone, you know, to take 3 breaths and kind of really be present with where you are. But I think of this verse in the same way. That is, where am I with my mind at any point in time, and how can I work with the mindfulness and the mental alertness to be able to observe my mind and what I'm doing? And it's just so easy in whatever we're doing. Even, you know, not like you have to be out in the world. We can be here working at the Abbey. And it's just so easy to get so engrossed in what we're doing, but I get so engrossed in what I'm doing that I lose my perspective of what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. And even though it might be a virtuous activity, I'm just not really very present with it. I'm hammering nails rather than really thinking about what I'm doing or how that might be of benefit to others. So I, like I say, I use this verse very frequently. It comes up in lots of other verses when we do the 37 practices of bodhisattvas, which is not necessarily a mind training text, but that same thing is, what's the state of my mind? How do we have those reminders to ask ourselves where we are at any given moment of time? In that same vein, I was home and visiting, and I have this blessing string on my wrist, and a number of my family and friends, most of which aren't Buddhist, were, you know, inquiring, well, what is that? And it's, for me, it's the same thing as having a, you know, a little wrist knoll in my pocket. It's, can I find the way during the day that I might just ask myself what's going on? And so I find those types of things when I reach into my pocket for something, and I'll just touch my mala, and it'll be a reminder of me. Maybe I won't do any mantra recitation, but it's like, where am I? What am I doing? To be able to find those ways. Maybe it's a, you know, at the Abbey we have some of the 37 practice verses around, or we read the offering service prayer, or we think about the monastic motivation. Whatever those things that you are, that you have around, I really encourage you to find those and put them in places that really help during the course of the day, kind of to bring us back to the Dharma and what's, where we are with our mind at any given moment. So I'm going to do a little bit of a chronology in terms of some of the mind training teachings and teachers. I'll probably throw in some other names, because it really is, for me, about what is it that inspires me. So, for example, Shantideva, who is way before most of the mind training texts were developed, I think in my reading and understanding of that, it really is the basis for a lot of the mind training teachings. So the same things that are in there in terms of how do we, again, how do we turn our thoughts from ourselves to others and wishing for their benefit. And, you know, just so many aspects of, for example, the Bodhisattva's Guide to a Way of Life. And then just reading the dedication verses, you know, at the end of that are just so inspiring to me. So, you know, just to read bits and pieces of those really create a focus. So I think of that in terms of, okay, Shantideva wasn't really in part of the chronology of the teachings that actually from where the texts that we're working come from. But in my mind, it provides some threads from the Buddha's teachings to other areas. And then I just think about the stories of who he was and what he went through in order to be able to share such profound thoughts and teachings. And I think we all have the capacity for how we share the Dharma with other people. Maybe that be a Shantideva, but I think a lot of times, speaking for myself, that there's a certain reluctance to share, or a certain reluctance to feel like, well, I don't really know enough. And I think it's really important to have a certain confidence and for us to be really focused on studying so that we can feel confident in sharing in ways, whether with other Dharma friends or with family and non-Buddhists, that it's really an important way to engage our practice, engage my practice with others. So, in everything that I've read, so much points back to Atisha. In the stories and, you know, and I'm not going to tell a lot of the stories, you know, touch on some of them. I won't go in any details. Venerable talked about a few of the stories from some of the different teachers and teachings. But to me, the perseverance of all sorts of different people that were involved in Atisha finally going to Tibet and the requests. You know, I hear Venerable Chogyam talk about, you know, when it's to come to the Abbey or to go to a teaching at Cloud Mountain, that it's really our responsibility as Dharma practitioners to get to our teachers, to invite our teachers, to request our teachers, and if they're not able to come where we are, that we need to get to where they are, at least at times, so that we can receive teachings, so that we can make those direct personal contacts. So the whole story of Atisha and going and studying and then being requested and finally spending the last 12 plus years of his life in Tibet and teaching, and the legacy that created is amazing. So just a couple of things that from looking at the life of Atisha, he really started his training when he was 8 years old, which, you know, to me, it's just, I mean, I know a lot of even current day you know, Tibetans that are in the monastic tradition start early, but just think about where we were when we were 8 years old and what we were doing, or at what point we, you know, we met the Dharma. But from very early on, he had a really, really close relationship with Green Tara. And I think one of the first retreats I did with Venerable Chogyam was a Green Tara retreat. And it's just, you know, for me, it's just been a really, again, a sweet connection and something that resonates for me. So just finding those little similarities in terms of teachings or teachers and stories seems to be threads that get woven for me that make a difference. As it relates, when I think about how that weaves back to the Abbey, one of his main emphasis was just kind of the focus on the monastic code, the Vinaya, and that rang through for all of the different areas of his teachings, with one of the cornerstones of what he was able to share and bring, and I think a lot of the basis for what developed in Tibet in terms of the whole monastic way of life and that flourishing for so many years, so many hundreds of years. And then again, one of the other stories, Rinchen Zangpo is the Tibetan who repeatedly requested Atisha to come and teach. And I don't know the whole story, but apparently there was some very minor transgression of Atisha, and he would consult with Tara, but his final decision to go to Tibet to teach was, the way it was phrased in the text was that he consulted with Tara. I was like, wow. You know, it was like going for a walk with Venerable Chogyam, you know, so I'm going to consult with Tara and decide if I should go teach in Tibet. So I just found that quite just was very, very powerful. So I'm gonna jump forward just a little bit, and then I'll retrace the steps a little bit back to Atisha, but starting from the mind training like rays of the sun. And I'll probably not do justice to some of the names. I actually consulted with Dallas earlier about one of them. So we'll see kind of if there's a consensus. So I invite those here to kind of correct me with any of the names. But Nam Kapel, who is the author of The Mind Training, Like Rays of the Sun, he was a student of Lama Tsongkhapa. And one of the really key pieces that in reading just kind of the context for the mind training text was, and what distinguished it from some of the other texts, it was really in the framework of using the stages of the path that Tsongkhapa had developed and taking the mind training and as well as the pith instructions and the 7 points and kind of weaving those two together. So there's other versions of the mind training that don't follow that in the same way, but that this particular text follows that same progression of using the Lam Rim and weaving in the Lojong teachings with it. And of course, I'm not going to go and say a lot about, you know, Tsongkhapa, but we know that's the cornerstone of the particular tradition that we study in, and so much was developed in terms of the Lam Rim, and you know, even just the emphasis with Venerable Chidrin and teachers like Lama Zopa, the importance of the Lam Rim teachings, that Tsongkhapa, you know, really was the one who provided that in a format that we have outlines that we can do in the morning that kind of put in some perspective of how we get from our confusion to hopefully an enlightened state. And then there's a couple of other people that that I have a particular affinity for from some other mind training texts that I've read. But the one in particular is Chiwaka. So I don't know. I've heard it pronounced Chiwaka or Chikawa. Excuse me, Chikawa. Chikawa? Okay, Chikawa. And basically is the person who developed the 7 points of mind training. So the basic framework of that. He was the writer that those teachings were passed down and came from, you know, ultimately from the writings and the texts of Atisha, but they were put into that particular connotation of the 7 points of mind training, which are even in the mind training like the sun. It really is the cornerstone, and it's those 7 points from which everything else kind of gets elaborated on. So many of the other mind training texts follow the 7 point mind training in terms of the format of them, or expand upon that. I think it's the 51, you know, pith instructions, which are grouped into those 7 categories as well in some of the other texts. What I really like about the pith instructions and the 51, you know, those 51 instructions, they're elaborated on in a number of different places, but I find that I can study them in group at any one time, but then there's particular ones that just seem to, I don't know, to resonate at a particular time. So sometimes I'll just find myself picking them up and reading them, and I might even take them out of context. I might just read it and with my own interpretation of how I could do that in a dharmic way. So I would actually encourage that. The book, I think it's Advice from a Spiritual Friend, which has those. There's actually, that is a really sweet book, which I was doing some reading for, because it's got 3 or 4 different mind training texts. It's got one of Atisha's texts in there. It's got the pith instructions. So there's 3 or 4 texts in there with a lot of the Similar background that Venable started out with, the mind training like rays of the sun, but I find it very easy to read in the commentary, I believe, by Geshe Rabdin and Geshe Nalang Darje. What's that?
Nalang Darje.
And so, I don't know, I just find their writing, I can resonate with them, and the commentaries and everything, and it's a very short, sweet little book. And then the other person, going back in time a little bit, is Longrin Tongpa, which is the author of the 8 Verses of Mind Transformation. And I probably didn't really know who was the author of those until I was doing a little reading and writing. But, you know, we've done the Chen Rezi retreats at different times, we use the 8 Verses of Thought Transformation as part of that daily sadhana. And I don't know, I think of any one particular text or piece of sadhana that has been inspirational for me, I would have to say that would be the one I would pick. You know, we do that recitation every few days here at the Abbey after lunch, and I don't know, it's one of those things that I don't ever tire of it, and it may be at any particular time what's going on, find one of those verses that really resonates with me. And then the last link between Longri Tongpa and Atisha was Drom Tongpa. And he was actually the kind of the spiritual heir to Atisha. And I'm not quite sure of the story, but I think of all of the many disciples and whatnot, he was the person that Atisha, particularly within these genre of teachings, kind of imparted, you know, as being the lineage for. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting about him was that he was a layperson, but obviously was very, very advanced. And one of his claims was that toward the end of his life, even as a layperson, he founded a monastery that flourished quite a bit. So I was thinking, well, it's kind of, you think of somebody who can lend themselves as a, you know, not being a monastic and be able for that to kind of flourish, and how wonderful and how just auspicious that is. So what I'd like to do for the remaining, I don't know, we may not make it the whole hour, we may make it to 7:50 or so, is to look at a couple of the other verses, for me in particular, 2 of the others from the 8 Verses of Thought Transformation, and to maybe just take a couple of minutes between them, and just do a little kind of silent reflection, and from that I'll share a little bit of my thoughts and kind of where they might fit into particular times in my life that they felt really meaningful. The second one from the 8 verses that I wanted to share, I'm looking back for the thread, but one of the cornerstones of all the mind training text is the 5th instruction of offering the victory to others. I don't remember exactly how the 5th verse goes, but basically it's similar. So I'm going to read the verse from the 8 Verses of Thought Transformation, and then we'll actually pause for a couple of minutes and just do a little silent reflection. When others, out of jealousy, mistreat with abuse, slander, and so on, I will practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to them. So being quiet for just a minute also brings back to me another reason why the eight verses are so poignant for me, is because we actually used those in the first retreat that I did with Venerable Chibrin. Then I have to laugh. Even some today, when I look at any of those verses, sometimes I go, what are you talking about? Give the victory to others, or whatever it is. All of them in some way at some time have just kind of turned my mind in a twist of, can I possibly do that? I mean, what was this person thinking of when they wrote this? But from that same retreat, I remember a young man who was a much younger man than me, but we were having a whole discussion around this particular verse and what it meant and how we could do it, or how that might look in our lives. And basically came in his thing as, well, I can either be right or I can be happy. And so when I think of this verse, a lot of times for me, a lot of times offering the victory is, it's about my wanting to be right. Even if it doesn't make any difference to the situation, I either want to have the last word, or I want my idea to be considered. And if I can just turn that a little bit in some way to say, it's just not that important, or maybe it isn't that I completely give up my own sense of my idea or my way of being better, but that might even for me just be a way that I could open up to really hearing somebody else's idea, really giving it equal space, maybe in a very mundane way. This isn't necessarily some big esoteric Dharma thing, but it's really about how can I hear somebody in a discussion a little bit differently than sitting in the community meeting and waiting for my turn to talk, as opposed to really listening to what everybody else has to say. Or in a meeting, you know, in a conference room. So for me, this, I don't know, it's just all the different ways that I don't have to be right. And I think about it driving, you know, that place where just want things to go my way, or a particular flow, or I'm in a hurry and then I get stopped for a light or whatever it may be. It's just this impatience. And if I can just relax and go, okay, it isn't that important, that I can switch that, but I don't have to then take it out on somebody else and create suffering results for myself sometime in the future. One of the other things about this, I think about, for the most part, I haven't had a lot of, in terms of people that I feel like have really been abusive to me, whether it be in family or work. I feel quite fortunate with that. But so I would, you know, take any these verses and in particular look at this and go, okay, what does that mean? What do I think? I think abuse, at least in our world, is this culture that has some trauma and thing around it. And, you know, the more I thought about it is, you know, abuse is just all the little inconsiderate things that we do to one another. And it doesn't have to be the big heavy things that, you know, we have to have years of therapy over, or years of Dharma practice. For me, it's ways in which, how do we take the little things that are our patterns or our habits that just don't work and aren't very skillful, and how can I change that a little at a time? And if I take those two verses together of, you know, examining my mind and watching what's happening, and then how can I offer the victory, you know, you can combine any of these verses and have them be quite productive in terms of being able to make a shift or a change. I would say without a doubt there's not a day that doesn't go by if I create the space that is an opportunity to defer from my own opinion. And You know, I also would say that doesn't mean that we don't have opinions or strong opinions, or that we just have to be meek and mild. We can still be confident and share our opinions. It's ways, and I think we all know the ways in which we do that, where we do it without any consideration, or we do it just in thoughtless kind of ways. And that if we can, you know, if I can find those times in any given day just to be able to have that, I just think of it as being considerate, you know, added consideration for the people that I'm in direct contact with. The other, the last verse, which is another one that's really a cornerstone of all the mind training, all the teachings on the 7-point mind training, ultimately comes around to exchanging self and others. So what I thought that we would do, and spend probably about 10 minutes or so doing it, is to use the next to last verse of the 8 verses of thought transformation and do a little Tonglen meditation. So carry the exchanging self and others to the next state of how we can then take that and really take on the suffering of others and be able to work with our mind, turn our mind to the thought of being able to offer them all that we have that's beneficial. So let's do that. I'll recite the verse and then lead us in, like I say, about a 10-minute Lam Rim meditation. In short, I will offer directly and indirectly every benefit and happiness to all beings, my mother. I will practice in secret, taking upon myself all their harmful actions and sufferings. Bring to mind an image of yourself. Could be in your current state or your current time. Maybe it's a time in the past. Time when you maybe had great doubt or suffered physically or emotionally. Bring to mind specific things that were distressing for you. Really develop a sense of compassion for what you were experiencing. Holding that image of yourself slightly external to you, her sitting there. Begin to breathe in. Breathe in the suffering and the pain of yourself. Breathe it in the form of dark smoke, pollution. And with successive breaths, feel that you've removed that suffering, that pain. The smoke becomes a dark cloud. And from it comes a thunderbolt that cracks, destroys the self-centeredness as if it were a lump of coal at your heart. Just a jolt that kind of completely obliterates the self-centeredness, the self-cherishing. And in that space, just really sit with a minute for the sense of spaciousness, expansiveness that's there. Imagine as your heart as a light. Kind of a wish-fulfilling jewel. And that light, it's your heart, you radiate out to yourself in that external being everything that you need, both temporally and spiritually. Could be teachings, teacher, health insurance, sense of peace and contentment in the midst of the chaos of a normal day. And really feel that you've been able to offer and make a difference to that external self. the sense of gratitude that you were able to offer those things. When we begin this practice with ourselves, not to reinforce any self-centeredness, but as with compassion, we can't really be in touch with the suffering of others until we've established the suffering of ourselves. So in this way, we have begun the taking and giving with ourselves. Then we'll do a second round in the same vein. But this time, bring to mind, could be anybody. Could be a family person, partner, a friend. Could be a stranger. Maybe somebody you saw at the doctor's office or the clinic or the store or the post office. Or maybe it's somebody with whom you have great difficulty. But bring one person to mind. One person to mind as a beginning, a way to establish a connection with each and every other being. And again, think of what their sufferings are or what their sufferings might be, their difficulties. And develop a deep sense of compassion. Maybe they've lost a child, or someone they know committed suicide, or they're facing a health crisis. Whatever it might be. Making that connection that they are just like you are. Maybe the problems are different. So then, breathe in. Breathe in all of the difficulties of that person. Again, in the form of dark smoke. Really hold the image of feeling that heaviness lift from them. Make it really tangible and feel them just become lighter in your heart. Like you've lifted a burden from their shoulders. They sit up another inch taller. A smile comes to their face. When you breathe in that dark smoke again, comes together as a cloud in your mind, and again it's from a lightning bolt strikes out at the self-centeredness at your heart, that solid immovable, the lightning bolt blasted apart. You can feel the pieces just fall away to the ground. breathe deeper. You experience that same sense of expansiveness. In that space, again, imagine a light. Light that radiates all the things that this person needs. From the mundane to the deeply spiritual. Just the right Dharma teaching. Right connection with a family or friend. And again, really make a connection with that person, noticing how they've changed, the delight that they have from receiving these things that they need. In short, I will offer directly and indirectly every benefit and happiness to all beings, my mothers. I will practice in secret, taking upon myself all their harmful actions and sufferings. So, in kind of closing, again, I hope that this sharing has been helpful, or that it might trigger some ways in which you find inspiration in your Dharma practice, in your connection with others. And I will also really encourage not to take away from any of the teachings that Venerable is doing, but to just look at some of the other mind training. I know another that I was thinking about, which was which Venerable has taught extensively about, which is the wheel of sharp weapons, and kind of it being in the continuum again of teachings and stuff that have been really quite poignant for me. And I don't know, just the repetition of the verses from the wheel of sharp weapons, you know, just kind of every now and then just kind of rings in my mind, kind of a bit eerily, but you know, with good motivation, you know, kind of. So, but I hope that whatever those are, in addition to augmenting what Venerable is continuing to teach with the mind training like rays of the sun, that you'll find helpful in terms of your practice and understanding of the mind training teaching. Next to our dedication.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.
In the snowy
mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. powerful cleansing gyatso generously, may we stay until samsara ends.
May the
deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and non-violent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West, Blue River.